Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. Welcome to the Clutter Fairy Weekly for April 27th, 2021. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, professional organizer and owner of The Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is our weekly webcast and podcast where we talk about all things organizing, everything you ever wanted to know. And we use your social media posts in order to drive our topics. And so we really appreciate that you go. Everybody's regularly commenting, and that gives us all sorts of fodder for our topic. So thank you so much.
If you're joining us in the Zoom meeting for the first time, you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let me know that you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can also share your questions and suggestions there, and I'll relay them to Gail. And during the live webcast every week, you can talk to us by phone by calling 669-900-6833. Use meeting ID 993-419-863 and password clutter to join the meeting. Okay, Gail, let's get right to business.
Okay.
First, we'll follow up on last week's tittle. For last week's assignment, we suggested that you examine your exercise routines or recreational activities and remove obstacles that are getting in the way of fitness and fun. We want to hear from our participants in Zoom and Facebook. Who tackled the tittle this week? Please let us know in the comments. For me, the recreational activity about which I've been feeling kind of stuck lately is gardening. I bought plants and materials a few weeks ago, but it's been hard to find the time to do the work because there's still so much to do inside the house after our move. So this week, I took some advice that we frequently give out and I asked for help. I got Jaime's buy-in on dedicating a few hours of a beautiful weekend afternoon to clearing weeds, preparing a raised bed, and planting three varieties of tomatoes, some jalapeno peppers, and a few different kinds of seeds. I also removed a small obstacle to the swimming routine that I mentioned restarting recently. I'm really bad about forgetting how many laps I've swum, so I went looking for an easy way to keep track. Gail, you're seeing me?
Yeah, I can see
okay.
You.
So I found this fairly inexpensive doodad. It's actually a knitting counter, and it's very,
it.
You know,
it.
It's,
make
oh,
it.
Sorry. Oops, I locked it. So this is actually a knitting counter. It's designed to help you keep track of your rows as you're knitting. And it was $10 at Michael's, which is not exactly as cheap as I'd like for something that's made entirely in plastic in China, probably. But still, it's really getting the job done, and it's still a whole lot cheaper than the electronic things that they would like to sell you to track your laps in the pool. And my main point in talking about it was, it's that notion of removing a little obstacle. You know, a lot of times we let some tiny little thing, like I lose track of my laps, create a sort of negative feeling about the activity, about the thing we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And just, I spent, you know, 10 minutes looking around online, found this. Jaime was going shopping, so I sent him to Michael's, and there we go. So,
and that's a great inexpensive solution. You don't have to, you know, you didn't have to front a bunch of money. If it doesn't work, you're only out $10. And if it does work, it gives you some relief about something that, you know, pokes at you and bothers you all the time when you go swimming. And so that's a great, you know, clearing the obstacle, working on solutions. And that's, you did a good job.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Lee said, I was bad working on yard and project. I was sore though. So I'm not sure if she means bad at what she was supposed to have been doing, but.
Yes, she says yes.
Okay. We'll probably get some more feedback on that, but let's go on. Let's okay. Talk about a YouTube comment. This is a tip from a YouTube viewer who goes by the nickname Wishful Thinking. Wishful writes, I worked really hard to set up a usable dining room. I made a commitment to honor that hard work. But the dining room is also my space for processing big projects, decluttering paperwork, etc. So I used that commitment to bring me back in alignment with having a clear dining room. Sometimes a project can run on for a few days. I get the room clear and back to neutral and available as soon as I can get the project completed. It helps to take photos of spaces I have reset too, since the photo can serve as a touchstone reminder of my accomplishment. When I look at a photo, I recall how happy I was to get that space into that condition. This is a way to use positive feeling to drive new behavior rather than the old shame, blame, and procrastination game.
I really love the process that you've created there. It's such positive reinforcement. And just to use the photo to remind yourself what the room looks like when it's clear and how it makes you feel when it's clear, that is such a supportive thing to do for yourself. Using the photos to support your goal of clearing the dining room back to neutral as quickly as possible is a great process. It's a wonderful new habit. I mean, it checks a whole bunch of boxes for me. I think you did a great job. Congrats on a really big win there. I love it. And I think that it can only, the idea that you have switched it from blaming yourself and feeling like a failure and procrastinating to positive reinforcement and an achievable goal. Like, I use this table all the time. I need it for things that over a day or two, it is a project table. And so your goal setting here is you want to be able to set it back to neutral as often and as quickly as possible. And that's a reasonable goal for you based on how you have said you use the table. And then you're using the photos of here's the great look that I like and makes me feel good as your trigger to keep aiming for that neutral dining room table. And yay, I love that whole process, and it's supportive all the way around. And it's a good balance for what you need to do there. And so great job. We love it.
Yes. And it's also kind of a good intro to our big topic today, because dining rooms are often a source of tension because so many people don't use them so often. You know, a lot of people don't use them so often that they keep it always ready for a meal. And so it becomes a natural stopping point for the thing you're going to work on or the stuff you're not prepared to deal with right now. And therefore becomes a source of tension. Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is the clutter implications of sharing space. Spouses, parents, children, roommates, housemates, and even guests who overstay their welcome can introduce extra complexity to our organizing challenges. We're going to dig into the complicating factors and suggest ways to improve your communication, negotiation, and cooperation to decrease household conflict and clutter. That's a mouthful.
Right? So I want to start with a chat comment that came from a Zoom participant in a previous episode. We want to do right by our family, and what you say about balance is very helpful. So much of making a household run smoothly is about balance. It's easy to understand that fact intellectually, but it would help to get your professional advice on how we are to apply it. How can we work practically towards balance when it comes to family organization? How do we bring balance to on-the-ground clutter challenges? It seems like the better we do that balancing act, the more space in all senses of the word we'll have to help and connect with family. Thanks for this great question. It really helps focus on this topic. Balancing the needs of the household so that all feel like their needs are being addressed is a constant learning game. If you live alone, then you set all the priorities and agendas. You make all the decisions about what you're going to deal with and what you're going to live with and what you're going to allow and not allow. But if you live with someone else, you're sharing an environment that affects all who live there. Deciding what creates the most improved effect for all who live there means you have to be in discussion with them regularly about it. It requires some master negotiation skills to find the changes that work the best for all. So first and foremost, let's talk about spouses or long-term partners. My clients tend to be mostly women, so what I hear the most about in my work is the issue women experience in managing clutter with, or sometimes in conflict with, their husbands. So scenario one, he's very neat, she's the cluttered one, and he pressures her about it all the time. Or scenario number two, he has clutter, she's more organized, and she has difficulty getting his buy-in for her organizing goals. Scenario number three, anything in between. He's neat except for his one problem collection, or he's easygoing except for his pet peeve, his pet clutter peeve. She's very organized and she married a chronically disorganized person. So they're constantly in conflict about the stuff in the house. Here's an example of a client couple with this tension in their marriage. And I am anonymizing them with fake names, and we're going to call them Sarah and Ben. These two adults both have ADD tendencies and they have three young boys. So their house is always chaos and they're always drowning in stuff. Sarah has a hard time focusing herself, and so she cannot keep ahead of her kids at all. Ben is also a clutter bug, but with some specific pet peeves, like he wants the dining room chairs lined up perfectly with the table. He doesn't see the chaos on top of the table, but the position of the chairs make him crazy every night when he comes home from work. So this is an example of something that his parents were super, super organized. The house was always neat as a pin. His mother spent all of her time keeping the house clean. And he doesn't come with those skills, but he expects the wife in this situation to solve all those problems. Except, of course, he didn't marry his mother. He married someone who was the opposite of his mother. And so, as far as he's concerned, she's always falling short of the mark. And he participates, he contributes, because he's not as neat as his mother either. He doesn't have those skills either, really. But his sense of what it should look like is defined by what he grew up in. So his target is pretty high for her. And then he's an engineer, and somehow the fact that the chair, like they have this big dining room table and they sit, everybody does homework there, and there's constantly, they're getting up and down from the dining table all the time, all day long. And then he comes home from work and he comes in the back and he comes up to this dining table and the chairs are pulled out, or they're halfway put back, or they're against the wall. They're not around the table in a very neat path. And somehow that makes him insane. And he doesn't even see that there's like this mound of stuff on the dining table that's complete. All of the detritus from the day is all on top of this table. And he doesn't even notice that. That doesn't bother him at all. What bothers him is the position of the chairs. And as soon as I had this discussion with them, it's like, oh, well, that's an easy win. At 5 o'clock, go over and, the wife can go over and put the chairs back in position. And she's done cleaning up, because when he comes home and sees the chairs in alignment, he's good. So that was an easy, easy fix to give him the ability to come home and not be angry when he walks in the door. And it doesn't require a lot of effort on her part to fix it. And so just asking him, I asked him as part of my work with them, what would really make this better for you? What is the thing that bothers you the most? What gets under your skin the most? And he started talking about these chairs, and he comes home and every night the chairs are out of, they're not, and it makes him mad. And I'm like, wow, you're worried about where the chairs are? You don't see all the rest of this chaos? But for me, it was chaos. For him, it was background to the chairs not being in alignment. So, well, it was an easy fix.
And the story, though, is a great illustration of, what you need is, to find the middle ground. You don't have to know, you don't have to understand where the other person is coming from.
No.
You have to have compassion, and you have to have respect for how they feel. And so for him, it's probably something to do with the outline. He sees a big picture, right? In which the chairs have a certain relationship to the table. And if that relationship is out of whack, then it doesn't work.
Yeah.
The table's just doing what a table does and holding up the pile of stuff, but the chairs need to be in a certain orientation, and that's how he sees it,
and that's what penetrates to him when he looks at the big picture, is the chairs in relationship to the table.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, okay, if that's what makes you happy, then that's an easy fix. And you can, when he's on his way home, you can walk over to the dining table regardless of what's going on today, and you straighten up the chairs and put them back in a position, which will take you approximately 90 seconds to walk around this table and put them all back together. Maybe, you know, 30 seconds if there's not too much chaos about the chairs, and you're done. And he comes home and he's happy. And like, how much better to have the husband walk in and go, oh, the chairs are in alignment. And then he's not triggered. He's not upset. And he can come in and be a happy guy when he comes in the house. And that makes everybody's life better, right? Super easy fix. Okay, so that was about spouses, and we'll talk some more strategies farther down. But another issue is people that you live with, or you signed up for kids, right? So you have kids, minor children at home. So you're going to have to live with a certain amount of clutter because of the kids, but enrolling them early in the chores they have to do to participate in the household is vital. The sooner you start them on their part of your shared space, the better. And if one more kid tells me that's what the maid is for, I'm going to scream. I have heard that's what the maid is for more than once. And that is just parents modeling that they let the maid solve their problem and they don't have to participate. And the kids learn the same thing from what you put out there. So that's not the truth. They're not always going to have a maid. I had this conversation with a 13-year-old one time. It's like, yeah, when you're, you know, when you have your own apartment, are you going to pay for the maid? Who's going to pay for the maid when you're living by yourself? Oh, well, my husband. Well, I hope you marry rich. You know, not everybody can afford a maid, sister. And it was the most unbelievable conversation I've ever had with a little kid about, yeah, that's not my job. It's the maid's job. It's like, yeah, that is not the lesson for you to learn here, because you are not always going to have access to the maid. Let me just tell you right now, from your little 13-year-old point of view, you might think that's true, but I'm guessing not forever. So won't you have an interesting wake-up call when you're living alone and there's not a maid to clean your apartment? Minor kids, you know, the younger they are, the more they want to participate and love you. When they get to be teenagers, it's harder. But if you are already enrolling them in things that they can do as young kids and requiring that they do it, then as they get to be teenagers, they will still, you can still expect them to do some things and participate. And hopefully you can get some compliance. So then there's those kids who are the adult children who've returned to the nest. So they have tasted some independence, so they don't want to be treated like children anymore, but the temptation to let mom and dad start taking back some of the adult responsibilities is really hard to resist. Home is a safe space to be a kid, and that's their mental space when they're at home with their parents. So defining new boundaries is really up to the parent at this point. And parents love having the kids at home most of the time, so falling into all the old routines of caretaking as if they're small children and unable to handle their own life is really easy to revert to for everybody. So we all have to agree that we're all adults now. So we're all going to participate in the care of our shared space. Another potential sharing of space would be with elderly parents. And the issue here is they've surrendered some independence because of their health or their capacities, their physical capacities, or their needs have changed, but they still need to feel like they're complete members of the household and have rights for privacy and to be respected, and they have valued input on decisions that need to be made. And so elder care has a huge impact on a family space and requires careful negotiation between elder and adult kids to make it work. And this is always complicated by whether that elder relative is still, like if that person has dementia or if that person is getting forgetful, then they want to be able to participate as a viable adult, and yet they're starting to lose some of the capacity to participate as a viable adult. And that makes negotiations difficult and requires some backup of some professional caregivers that know what they're doing and can coach you about how to deal with that kind of stuff. That gets a little bit out of my area of expertise, but I do know that as you're living and taking care of a parent who is sort of losing some of their mental faculties, having those negotiations, they want you to talk to them like they're an adult and it isn't forgetting and isn't losing some mental focus. And you know that regardless of what you do, they're not going to remember it, or regardless of what you ask, they're not going to be able to comply. And so it makes those negotiations a little bit different, and they get skewed for how you have to interact with that person. So I recognize that that situation is very difficult. Having a housemate or a roommate is another place where you got to negotiate. The fact that two or more people share friendship bonds or a desire or a need to share expenses doesn't necessarily mean that those same people will share the same ideas about order, cleanliness, or responsibility for household tasks. So who knows what organizing style is going to show up to the table? Penny and I definitely sit on different places in the spectrum there. I am clearly, I have a more organized bent, and she organizes in sort of a project kind of way. So she will let a bunch of chaos slide until she gets to a level where it bothers her, and then she'll go and tackle it. So she sort of batch processes, and I do a little bit more, I do a little bit more frequent and more churning kind of stuff that's more, it's quicker to address things. But I'm also pretty easygoing about it. And if the house was in complete chaos, I would have a problem. But I just, you know, it's like, yeah, she's my roommate and she cooks dinner, so I'm not going to complain very much about how much gets done. And like I said, when she reaches her threshold, then she starts to tidy up, shift up, organize stuff. And so occasionally I will say, listen, we need to work on this area. It's bothering me. But then if I ask, then she jumps in and we do it together. And so we've created a good balance. And I think I'm lucky that she's not somebody who's chronically disorganized way off the end of the spectrum. And I'm not super, super neat and uptight about being organized. And so we sort of sit in the middle somewhere, and it makes it easy for us to negotiate. Thank goodness.
When last I had a roommate, our dear
friend, many years ago,
our dear friend, David, he is much more organized than I am.
He was very neat. Yes, he was very, very neat and tidy.
And I'm not, I'm reasonably organized, but I think my more important characteristic was recognizing where I fell short of his standards and making clear to him that he should let me know if I was failing to notice something, if I was doing something that was giving him,
it was tweaking, you know, him,
that was bugging him. Because it's much harder, I think, on the person who is more highly organized when you're out of balance.
Yes, they twitch more.
I mean, unless that person is a tyrant, in which case it can be pretty hard on the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
But David was never a tyrant about it. David was very compassionate and understanding.
Yeah, so, thank goodness. And you guys worked it out, right? Like when he was uncomfortable, then you guys addressed it together and it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. The benefit of being roommates instead of spouses, that you don't have all that other stuff in the way of negotiation. It's harder for spouses because there's a whole lot more going on for them, right?
Yeah. It's harder to separate deeper stuff. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So the last category of shared space, people who share spaces, is really house guests. And sometimes circumstances arise where someone comes to stay as a guest and they end up sticking around long enough to become de facto members of the household. And this came to mind because we've had so many people displaced by flood around here lately, but they also get displaced if here's a fire, here they're doing a renovation project, whatever. And lately, they sell their house and they don't have anywhere to go yet. They haven't bought another one. And so they end up staying somewhere while they look for a house. And so you may end up with a house guest that you thought was going to be there for 3 days and they end up being there for 3 months. So then you have the issue of unfamiliar habits and schedules that are not in alignment. And there's things that can create messes and misunderstandings between house guests. And so it's another situation of where you have to negotiate about this stuff. So let's talk about strategies, sort of general strategies for any kind of the relationship, any of these relationships we talked about. I think the first thing here is really you want to recognize, and it's sharper in, if you think of spouses as the most minefield laden emotional relationship where you have to negotiate, trying to come to this conversation with turning off your emotional triggers about why this is a problem, finding really neutral and new ways to talk about it will help with the negotiation. But you really, as you start this process, part of what you want to aim for is what's the common ground between the two of you? What would be some goals on which you both agree? And the wider apart you are, the more one person is super neat and one person is really chaotic, the harder and the more work it will be required to make this happen. But there's always some common ground that you can both agree on. And my original clients, married couple, the husband got tweaked before the wife, and frankly, the wife would never get tweaked. She's chronically disorganized and she would let it go until she was completely buried in stuff and never notice it. So the common goal that they agreed on was that he could deal with it up to a point, and he had a pretty high threshold. But then when he hit his threshold, she had to do something, even though she wasn't willing. She wouldn't be triggered normally, because frankly, she would never be triggered. She would never reach a place where it was too much for her. So in order to, they agreed that they didn't want the husband to be mad all the time. They agreed that they didn't want to get a divorce over the clutter. And so the goal was he would live with it up to a point. And then when it got to him, he would say, okay, I can't take this anymore. And she would be willing to participate with him to get it back down to a level that he was willing to live with. And not getting a divorce is a good compromise. It's a good goal. Let's not get divorced. But this is how two people that were sort of on the cluttered end of the spectrum were able to negotiate the fact that one of them was always going to get triggered before the other one. And frankly, she would never get triggered ever. So of this is too much. So they worked it out, and they live with a level of clutter that I would find terrifying. It would make me insane, but it works for them. And when it tips the scale, they dial it back. I go over there and I shovel it back and move things around and reclaim enough space that he feels comfortable again. And that's how we do it. So it works. And, you know, part of their coping mechanism was to hire an organizer to come in and start helping them work on it. And that's how my business was born, by the way. You do have to recognize the need for compromise. This is an important strategy, especially if you have very different organizing styles. Coming up with a compromise is the most important thing. And the best way that you can get there is to ask each of you, what is the thing that makes you the most distressed? What's the thing that's poking the loudest? And that's how I start working with clients. Like, let's work in the area that makes you the most irritated, because it doesn't really matter why the chairs didn't align with the table for him, that bothered him so much. It didn't have to make sense. It didn't really matter that she didn't understand why the chair's not being in alignment, like it didn't bother her, and why should it bother him? It didn't matter. That one was something that was such an easy fix, and it relieved him mentally and emotionally so much. It made his return to home so much more comfortable and peaceful that it was totally worth fixing it. And that's a goal. Like, okay, that's something that really bothers you. That's something I can easily fix. We're going to make it the goal that I'm going to move those chairs around before you come home every day. Like, regardless of what happens to them during the day, he's not there to see it. It doesn't matter. And at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, she's going to go straighten up the chairs. And when he comes home, he's going to be happy. Easy fix. So you want to ask all of the participants, whatever their level, whatever their relationship in the family, what's the things that bother them? Somebody's going to say, I hate it when there's dishes in the sink. Somebody's going to say, I hate it when there's stuff on this table or things on the floor. It doesn't matter what the point is. If you can just negotiate on ways to address those things, you'll go a huge way towards, then you don't have to like anybody that's screaming, God, this house is always such a wreck, or why is this house such a wreck, is really saying, I have been triggered by something particular that gets on my nerves so much that it makes me angry and I start to flail about the house. It isn't that the whole house needs to be organized. It's that you have to find the things that bother them the most. And if you can address them, you can stop the trigger response of, and then the continuous loop played tape of, this house is a wreck. I now don't have the time. This is such a great year. What a mess. There's some tape that you guys have been playing in your head and playing, like you say the trigger word and it punches the tape. And then you guys start saying the same things back and forth to each other you've been saying for 20 years, right? And so we don't want to avoid that. We know that doesn't solve the problem. So go for the thing that makes you most crazy.
I want to jump in with a comment from Anya.
Okay.
She says, our solution is a separate room for my husband where he can create his own mess as he likes. It is not very bad, so I can tolerate it. The other rooms and parts of the house, I am allowed to determine the level of tidy. And that's a good compromise if it works.
It's an excellent compromise. Yeah. Right?
Have zones that, you know, that these are the agreed upon common areas to which a high level of organization will apply. And then here's your pig pen.
here's where I'm not going to say anything to you about it. Right.
Yeah.
And that is great because in the end, he can, if he's feeling, you know, oh God, this is too sterile, I want to be in a mess, he can go sit in the place that feels comfortable for him. And you can just go, have a good time, honey. Enjoy that. And if that allows you, if that gains his compliance in other areas, I think that's a great trade-off. And, you know, two people that live together, everybody needs to be able to be relaxed and happy. And so that's a great solution.
Well, and she says it works for us because he likes tidy, but does not want to put in the work in his own room. And that's, you know,
that's so valid.
Yeah, he enjoys having an organized space. And so, you know, letting him have a little latitude on the space that is only his kind of lets him enjoy a mostly organized house.
Yeah, yeah.
And also his own work style.
Right.
His own chaotic style of handling things.
An excellent compromise. And I suspect that lots of people make that compromise. Like, I surrender this room to you. La, 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 la. I don't see it. But out here in the kitchen or out here on the dining table, we're not doing that. And this is what we're going to do instead. The more neat you are, the more organized you are, the more compromise you're going to have to make. Because if you're living with somebody who isn't you, then they're not going to meet your standards most of the time. So coming to a place where a level of okay that works for you and that you can maintain and the other people can participate in without lots of resentment is what you're aiming for. So like all things in marriage, there is, you know, we compromise about all things, right? Don't surrender all of your needs. Everybody needs, even the neat person, even the super organized person needs to get some of their needs met. So even for that person, it's important to discover what would give me the most relief, what would feel the best for me. If I have to ignore some stuff in the house, what is at the top of my list for giving me relief and feeling good about it? And, you know, advocate for that. And you'll be surprised if you can get the thing that bothers you 70% of the time. And if you can get that addressed regularly, then it'll be much easier and it'll be a lighter burden for you to go, yeah, yeah, I wish my house was like, you know, Martha Stewart, but I live with somebody who it's never going to happen. And so I'm going to live with 30% mess, but I get this thing over here that really bothers me addressed. And that's how we coexist. And I love them. And so this is our compromise, right?
I want to share a comment from Deborah. She said, my late DH, dear husband, liked things organized, but didn't like to do it. However, he got great amusement when I would inform him that this is the new home for X, then he would do it, work for both of us. That is very much how Jaime and I reach compromise.
Air quotes, compromise.
He tells me what to do and then I do it. No, because I don't have a high level of investment in the particulars. I like things to be tidy and organized, but I don't care if it's in this room, in that cabinet.
How that tidy is built, right?
How it's built. If there's a problem, I will give feedback and I'll honestly say, I'm spending a lot of time walking back and forth to here to get this. What if we tried another spot for this? And he's great about saying, yeah, you're right. That's good. What if we got a rack like such and such, or a bin like so and so? And I say, go to it. Go shopping.
Knock yourself out, right?
While we're still on the subject of organizing styles,
yeah.
Anya asked about, are you familiar with Cass Arson and the clutterbug styles? The ladybug, cricket, butterfly?
Yes, I have heard about that, yeah. I'm not super familiar though.
It's interesting, and I'm gonna share a link there's a quiz that I'm going to share
okay.
to everybody in the Zoom, and I'll also put it in the show notes for a quiz to find out what kind of clutterbug you are. But it's about orientations to how you like to have things and mm-hmm. how you like to organize things. So it's sort of
and there is this there's some people that like it to look pretty, but they don't actually. They want the style of a pretty house, but they don't particularly care what's happening behind the scenes. And so sometimes you'll go in a house that looks beautiful and perfectly styled and arranged and it looks lovely. And then you start opening cabinets and closets and it's total chaos in the closed spaces.
Yeah.
They just want the visual clean. They don't actually want it organized. So you have to identify what's really important to you in this choice. Is it really the look, or do you actually want some organizing function, or what your target is, and getting clear about that about yourself is super important in these negotiations.
It's an interesting model I wasn't familiar with, but and the matrix is visual abundance versus visual simplicity, and organizational abundance micro solutions versus organizational simplicity macro solutions. What we would call bigger buckets.
Right.
You know, macro right. solutions. So that's interesting. And we might look into that and talk about it some more.
Yeah. Yeah. We might need to cover that later.
And Jane says she has a TV show on HGTV.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Which cool. of course I have not seen because.
Because you don't ever go to HGTV.
I don't even have cable anymore.
Okay. One of the strategies is that you have to have really honest conversations about this before somebody is angry. Reaching the boiling point is the worst possible time to have this discussion. So this is all part of not triggering your habitual angry response to this situation. If you've been living with this person for any amount of time, you guys already have a tape. Each of you has a tape in your head. And it gets triggered when somebody says specific words like, why is this house always a wreck? Or I can't believe, look at this mess, or whatever it is that sets people off. And then your tape plays and y'all just start having the same fight again and again. So you don't want to have this discussion while you're having that fight. You want to have this discussion when everybody is neutral and you want to work really hard about being honest and not saying you're such a mess or I can't live with your chaos, but instead having a conversation that is, it really bothers me, this stuff on the counter in the kitchen really makes me crazy. And it would make me much happier in the house if we could figure out a way to keep this clear most of the time. So asking for what you really want and having this conversation when everybody's calm and not directly before or after you have an argument about it, and trying to stay as neutral, emotionally neutral as possible, and be respectful that I feel this way and it doesn't matter whether you understand it or not. this is what I need to be happy in the house. And you can't be, I need it all my way or I'm not happy. That's not compromising. But you can say, these are the things that bother me the most, or these are the things that upset me the most, or these are the things that make me feel uncomfortable, unhappy, not enjoy my house. And so can we work on these areas together? Can we come to some compromise around them? You really don't want to be using the languages of blame and shame. You know, when somebody is saying to you, this house is a wreck, why can't you? What is the problem here? It's such a disaster all the time, yada, yada, yada. You really want to say instead, when I come home from work and I see the chairs out of alignment, it really makes me unhappy. It really makes me angry. And then I feel bad that I walk into the house and I'm immediately angry when I first come home to see my family. And so it was helpful that the husband was able to tell me instead of to tell his wife, like we were all standing there together, but I asked the question and he answered me. And so then I'm not in a marriage with him. And so it was very easy for him to tell me, I get angry and it bothers me. And then I feel bad because I come home and I'm immediately angry in front of my wife and children. And so it's like, well, that's an easy fix. Oh my gosh. And I turned to her and said, oh, you can go put the chairs in alignment and he'll come home and be calm. Like, that's the easiest clutter fix I've ever heard of. So it's harder if you don't have, you know, a neutral negotiator, right? Which is part of why you have an organizer come and help, because sometimes it helps make those conversations go well. But if you have to do it between each other, then you just have to try really hard to A, not doing it when you're angry, and B, be respectful of each other and don't be blaming and shaming. You want to talk about specific things that bother you and how it makes you feel and how it would improve your participation if we could come up with a solution together.
On the subject of boundaries, Tammy writes, I have OCD and get triggered by seeing a sink full of dishes with food at a friend's. I wash till I see a clean sink, but I think it bothers her. And there was more feedback in the chat kind of on both, from both directions, because on the one hand, maybe she needs the help and appreciates it. But on the other hand, you can make people feel judged. You know, mm-hmm. You can, like, I didn't ask you to clean my dishes. Now I feel bad because you drew attention to my mess.
And reflected that you have a judgment about it, right? Like if you go over to somebody else's house and start cleaning, then it may be your OCD in action, but it may also to the person whose house it is, feel like you're having a judgment about, I can't be in this house because it's a mess and I think it needs to be cleaned immediately. And so it's definitely a way of triggering everybody's stuff.
And the best thing unintentionally, you can do, you know, you always came to our parties, and when the last guests were trickling out, you would say, okay, I didn't get to help cook, but you got to let me help clean up. And we would say, yes, thanks. Because we didn't feel judged at all. We were exhausted from our cooking overachievements. And so we were, you know, like David and I, or Jaime and I, are always happy for you to jump in on washing dishes. But some people aren't. And so you know, I think you should ask. You should always ask before you pitch in at somebody else's house, whatever, no matter what it is. You know,
and I think for Tommy's situation, she has OCD. So that's, she's got to, that's part of what she's dealing with. And it's part of what's on her plate.
Right.
And B, this is a friend. And so maybe they need to have a conversation where she is saying in advance, not while she's cleaning the dishes, why she's triggered and why it's a problem. And, you know, it is her OCD. And, you know, please know that I'm not making judgment about you. It is a trigger for my OCD. And I really, I'm sorry that, you know, that's part of my mental health issues to deal with. And I am not trying to make a statement about who you are and what your house is like, it is totally my OCD acting up and I feel like I need to, you know, clean it. And so can I have your permission to
wash some dishes,
wash those dishes while we are talking or whatever, because it will help me. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to say anything about you, but it will help me if I do this. And are you cool with that? And if you can just get some, you know, have a conversation while you're not actually doing the dishes and be careful about using judgmental words. You have to acknowledge that it's your OCD response. Lots of people leave dirty dishes in the sink. It's your OCD response that has judgment about that and about what that means. And the dirty food is a problem. And that's your response. It's not everybody's response. And so you can't make her feel like she should be having your response about it. You really have to say, this is about me and my OCD. And if you're okay with it, can I do this while we're talking? And, you know, there you go.
Yeah. I want to share a great comment from Wolf on who's watching on Facebook.
Hi, Wolf.
Not the clutter and mess, but the attitude about it and about helping and the lack of consideration for its effect on other household members meant the end of a 5-year relationship in my life and the person moving out. That's a really key point. It's not the stuff itself, but how people talk about it, think about it, and behave about it.
And are willing to jointly address the problem.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry that was the end result. And maybe not living with that person was the best choice for the two of you. Like it didn't work out because you couldn't come to some kind of compromise. And, you know, maybe you could have looked for a mediator, had somebody come in and negotiate with you, make it be different. But it sounds like if it was enough to trigger somebody moving out, then, you know, we can't always live with everybody we meet.
Yeah.
There are some people that I couldn't live with, that's for sure. And, you know, it's just, I'm sorry that it turned out that way. And maybe that was a relief for both of you, actually, like trying to live with each other's targets was too much of a strain. And that's a bummer. I do want to throw in about kids here.
Yeah.
The way that you negotiate with kids is all wrapped up in how you are as a parent, and trying to get them to have the value about, we like to take good care of our things and we like to clean up after ourselves and we want to share things with those that don't have the same amount of abundance that we do, and examples like that. It's an opportunity to share values. You know, cleaning up the house isn't just about cleaning up the house. It's also about honoring your space, creating, you know, they don't understand as little kids, they don't have the brain power to process. When there's this much chaos, it makes me harder to make choices, live my life, be comfortable, calm down. Like they don't recognize that chaos affects their emotional regulation. They don't understand what that means. You know what that means, but they don't know what that means. And so you can sort of talk to them about, we like to clean up over ourselves because then it make, you know, then it's a more restful place when we get done, or we like to put things away because we want them to last and we want to take good care of them. And you're the kid, and part of participating in this house is that everybody does chores, and here's your list of chores, and we're going to get you to do these things. And of course, when they come teenagers, then you have a whole nother ball of wax to deal with. But little kids in the beginning, particularly, they just want to do what their parents want them to do, and they want to fall around and do what mom's doing. And, you know, you see all the little toddlers pushing around the fake vacuum cleaner. Like they're just doing what you do. And so it's a good time to enroll them in the idea of, every night we do some part of dealing with the house. Every night we reset the bedroom, or we clean up the playroom, or we put today's toys away, or we pick up our dishes from dinner. And repetition, right? They have a little kid brain. And so you have to do it over and over and over to teach them.
Claire on Facebook has a great comment. She says, if you make the tidy up a game, the children actively take part. Who can put away the Legos the fastest? Boxes and containers with cutout pictures of the cars, bricks, pencils, etc. help even very young children to participate in clearing up. Don't get another box out until the first one has been cleared away. It works.
Right.
And that's, you know, some of that is you, children have the expectations that you teach them to set, you know, yeah. And children have ideas about fun that you have modeled for them, you know? So mm-hmm. if you act like doing the stuff that's necessary to keep the house neat and clean is a chore, that's what they're going to learn.
And if, model it that way.
And if you act like this is a constructive, productive way for us to live in a beautiful space, that's what they're going to learn.
And that it's about taking care of yourself and it's about being comfortable. And they can certainly understand, you know, depending on how old they are, you can certainly explain to them when there's a lot of stuff like this, mommy thinks that it feels like the stuff is chattering and it's too loud, that it's distracting and it gets in the way. And if we put the things away, then I feel like I can relax. And, you know, they can understand the concept of relaxing, even they don't quite understand how that comes about, but you can certainly have a conversation about feeling differently in one kind of space versus another kind of space in language that the kid understands. And then you can make it about their comfort and their ability to relax and their ability to have fun and make it be something they can relate to, mm-hmm. I guess, in terms of their own environment.
Yeah. Kathleen said, I had a roommate that was super tidy, but everything was filthy. For me, I was a bit messy, but everything was clean. So that was an interesting dance.
Right. But then it's like, so you can clean stuff and she can neat stuff. Yeah. Right. And that's a good way to divvy up the results. Like if somebody wants the table to be wiped down every day and that really annoys them, that can be their chore and your chore can be taking the garbage out because I hate taking the garbage out. Like, you know, having a conversation about what you like to do and what you don't like to do. I hate vacuuming. Oh my God. Every time I run the vacuum, it just makes me angry. By the time I'm done, I don't move it around very well. I get caught in the cords all the time. I'm just not coordinated enough to make the vacuum cleaner run easily. And so it just annoys me to no end. And Penny's like, yeah, vacuum. Da, 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 da. So she does the vacuuming because it makes me insane. I unload the dishwasher because that makes her insane. So, you know, you can just go, these are the ones I hate to do. And these are the ones that I'm okay doing, or I don't care about doing. And let's divvy them up and see if we can, you know, assign the chores that way. You may be surprised. I get so irritated about the vacuuming. I can't imagine anybody else isn't bothered by it. But of course, millions of people are not bothered by it. It's just me. So you'd be surprised what the other person is willing to do. They don't mind sweeping the floor. They don't mind dusting the stuff, whatever. You can divvy those chores up and see that the things that make everybody the most annoyed gets addressed first. And what things you might collectively be willing to let slide, both of you, so that you can have more relaxation time. Totally a negotiation. But if you have a conversation about very specific pieces, you will be surprised what kind of solutions you can come up with. And we're close to time, so we probably have to go to the tittle.
Yeah, let me make a couple quick announcements and then I'll come back to you for the tittle. I want to remind our viewers and listeners that we have a YouTube channel with more than 150 videos on a wide variety of organizing topics going back as far as 2009, something like that. Go to cfhou.com/YouTube. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube and then click the bell icon next to the subscribe button if you'd like to get notifications whenever we post new content. I also want to remind everyone that we'll be back next week, Tuesday, May 4th, 2021 at noon U.S. Central Time, live in Zoom and streaming on Facebook. We're going to talk about usual and unusual organizing tools. And so
we're gonna do a little product parade next week.
Yeah, so we hope you'll tune in for that. Okay, let's get to the tittle.
Okay, so this week's tittle is called Get Everyone on Board. The assignment is to engage another member of your family or household in an organizing task or project. For example, one of the Zoom participants mentioned needing her husband to make decisions about a vinyl record collection to which he never listens, but which is taking up a lot of storage space. So as you discuss the task or the area in question, set aside your judgment or your blame or any history the project may have, all the other arguments you've had about it. Focus instead on things on which you can agree and on constructive ways to move forward, such as improving your communication about the stuff, how you use your home, and your shared roles in caring for the space, learning more about and accommodating each other's different tastes, habits, and organizing styles, clearly communicating your needs about organizing to the family member or housemate in question, and aim for a concrete set of steps that addresses each of your most annoyed trigger area, the thing that bothers each of you the most. And don't care if you doesn't matter if you understand what it is, but everybody gets to say, this makes me the most crazy. And then you guys can collectively bargain about a way to address that solution, come up with a solution to address that problem. And let's see if we can have some successful negotiation out there. Can't wait to hear how it goes. Go team,
okay.
Go.
Okay. If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To receive notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You don't have to be in Houston, even though it's still called the Houston Clutter Coaching Meetup Group. We have members in
from all over,
pretty much every English speaking country on the planet. You can also follow us on Facebook by going to cfhou.com/Facebook, or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you. So please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions in the YouTube comments, on Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Ta-da! We are so glad that you came and joined us today. Thank you again for everybody that participates. We love having this community built. It's so much fun here, and we enjoy it every week. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.